And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. Want to send out a big thanks to the people who contributed to the fundraising campaign. We did great this year. Thanks everyone who contributed. We're able to bring you very special and interesting programming. And I'm very pleased to say today we have Mahdi Darius Nazimroya. Of course, Mahdi is an author, a journalist. He writes for a number of publications such as Global Research right here in Canada. And on the 18th, there was an article published by Mahdi called "The Demonization of Arabs, Muslims. The Harper government spreads hate in Canada while it supports terror overseas." So we're very pleased to have Mahdi with us. Thanks for coming on the program today, Mahdi.
Thank you for having me, and hello to everybody, all the listeners.
Well, you know, if there's something going on in the Middle East or in other parts of the world, Mahdi is someone we can turn to. You usually know what's going on, and you know what's going on here as well. You've been following the many activities of the conservative government here in Canada, and we all appreciate your work on this subject. Now, you've been pointing out that the Harper government, the conservatives, have been spreading hate or negative feelings towards Muslims and Arabs in the country in the way you've been describing it. I think for sure you've been saying that the conservatives have singled out Muslims and Arabs living in Canada. And in your article, you pointed to what the journalist Stephen Zhao said not too long ago. He said that the conservatives have gone after many Arab and Muslim groups that have publicly challenged the party's hawkish foreign policy stances. These crackdowns have laid the groundwork for further repression and histrionics when the Tories need a boost in the polls. And you quoted further from that. But I'm wondering, can you tell us, what do you mean when you say that the Harper conservatives are singling out Muslims here in Canada?
Well, we have a government right now that's basically using xenophobia, alienation, demonization. It's using polemics. For example, the debate that they've created over the citizenship oath about women that cover their faces who are Muslim. If we look at that, for example, up to 2000, and first of all, I don't know how many individuals, women in Canada, cover their faces, so I don't know the exact number. But I don't think it would be anything past 50 women. You know, don't quote me on that, but I think this is a very small group. They've turned this into a huge issue. And until 2011, women were allowed to cover their faces for religious reasons, what they perceived as religious reasons, at the citizenship oath. And then this government went against it. The courts this year ruled that the government's actions are unconstitutional, but they've made a huge issue about it, talking about how everyone should be equal. I mean, if everyone's equal, why are you singling out women that can't cover their face? But if they really wanted to solve that, they would have those women take oaths in front of an official who is a woman, so they don't need to cover their faces, but they don't want to solve that. I mean, that's just the beginning of the polemics that they use. Now there's a bill that they're passing against barbaric culture or uncivilized culture, where you can't have more than one wife, which is already illegal in Canada. This bill is obsolete. It's redundant. Honor killings, killing somebody in Canada is illegal anyway, but this is obviously polemics, and they're trying to single out practices, whether you agree with them or not, whether they're legitimate or not, even. And you know, there's theological debates on these things too that happen to come from the Muslim world. So they're really deliberately singling out Muslims. And if you look at incidents of violence in Canada that have occurred in the last 2-3 years, anything that's tied to a Muslim is automatically called a terrorist incident, and any criminal act that's conducted by a non-Muslim or a non-Arab is not a terrorist act. So we had the attack on Parliament Hill. Immediately the government comes and says it's a terrorist attack. We had the Saint-Jean-sur-Richelieu, we had the hit and run. It was called the terrorist attack. They were, the government even tried to link these to the ISIL or ISIS or Daesh, as they call it in Arabic, the acronym for it. They try to connect it to that. But when we have other incidents, when, for example, a veteran wants to blow up because he's upset, a former intelligence NCM wants, official in the military wants to blow up a building filled with government employees, and he has a very thorough plan. It wasn't an ad hoc thing at all. It was not this unorganized attack that was spontaneous or not thoroughly planned. It was very well planned. Surveillance videos, outlines, blueprints. When this happens, the government says nothing, keeps it quiet, actually prevents the individual's names from being published in the media for a while. Eventually it does get published. And it's not called a terrorist incident.
Okay, I see what you're saying here. There's a massive double standard in effect, and what you've pointed out is that any time Muslim is involved in some criminal act, it gets hyped up all over the news, and the government takes a role in saying something about it and talking to Canadians about it. But, you know, you've indicated here that there have been plots to murder Canadians or even blow up government offices, and these plots were not done by Muslims. They were not concocted by Muslims, and so basically we didn't even hear about it much.
No, we don't. There's double standards in two forms of double standards here. One is through the media and sensationalism as well as focus. Okay, and of course we know that media focus and media discourse has a lot to do with practicing power, okay? And it's tied to sources of funding, ownership, whether it's private or government. So that's one aspect. And then there's the policy governmental aspect. And the government decides to call incidents, even though some security officials disagree with the government on many of these instances, or analysts, they decide to call some of these incidents terrorist incidents while they don't call other ones terrorist incidents. For example, in Halifax, there was the kids, they wanted to go into the mall, they wanted to kill a lot of people. The RCMP said they had some views they were willing to die for, okay? But they never talk about it. Due to some investigative journalism from people in Nova Scotia and the Atlantic, it's uncovered that those views were Nazi views. Okay, and Nazi views are political views, you know. So, and the government tried to wriggle its way out saying we can't call this terrorism because there's no political, under our definition of terrorism, there's a political or religious motive. Well, if you should use the same standards, the same measuring stick should be used. If you want to call the other incidents terrorism, you should call this terrorism. But they've declined from it. They said that these are sick kids, they're just misguided or psychologically unbalanced. Same thing in Ottawa. There was a U.S. veteran who had what the RCMP says was storing chemical weapons. This is the RCMP saying that. And when he's caught, no, there's no, the same discourse is not used whatsoever.
Yeah, it sounds like the definition of terrorism that they're using, because you said, you know, this doesn't apply to our definition of terrorism. I guess the definition of terrorism is you're a Muslim, you know, and if you commit an act of violence and you're a Muslim, then you're a terrorist. And otherwise, no, even if you have a political ideology and you're willing to kill people, that doesn't just seem to fall into their definition of terrorism, at least the way they're actually using it in practice. And you said here that in the case of these people that had Nazi political views that wanted to shoot up a mall, that excuses were made that these were just sick kids. But you know what? We actually had a sick person, and that was, of course, the Ottawa shooter, the Parliament Hill shooter. That was a very sick, mentally disturbed person who needed treatment. And of course, they managed to tie this to their campaign about ISIL. So, you know, can you tell us about that and the other incident in Quebec with the vehicle?
Okay, well, you know, when these incidents happened, I spoke to a lot of different people. In fact, the day of the attack, I contacted Parliament. I had discussions with social work, my friends that are in the social services. I discussed security aspects. I was in Ottawa, of course, so I got input from a variety of sources on it. And I can tell you one of the most important points was, this is what I was told from the social services sector, that within that week, that the individual that attacked Parliament Hill could have been any one of their clients, potentially. What they meant by this is that that individual represented a failure in our system, not to prevent terrorism. It prevented he symbolized the cutbacks, the lack of support for people in Canada, the austerity that's hurting people that actually need psychological and social support. I was frankly told that any of my clients could end up doing that, and it's because the system is reactive. It's not proactive, and I'm not talking about security system. I'm talking about the healthcare system and the social system. It's letting these people. It's not giving these people the care that they need. So that was an important aspect of it. So this was a sick individual who actually tried to get help and never received it. Never received it at all. He basically, some people called his mom, his own mom actually said that she thinks it was suicide by homicide. So this was someone who was reaching out for help and they never received the help that they needed. And the government took the opportunity to basically highlight what it was already planning on doing in terms of, surveillance at home. And in terms of going to war in the Middle East, both Syria and Iraq, it used that opportunistically to legitimize or to justify why it was sending Canadian troops to Iraq. It was total intellectual dishonesty on the part of the government, because this individual had no ties to ISIS, and in fact the video message he left, which they didn't share until March, an edited version with some portions cut out, basically said that his actions were, although he was sick, is a result of Canadian policy in places like Afghanistan and Canada's plans to go to Iraq. The RCMP said they didn't reveal this tape because of the influences it could have on third parties, and I think what they meant by this is it could create more opposition in Canada towards a mission towards Iraq. The majority of Canadians didn't support the mission to Iraq, which the government has very clearly lied about. So they took advantage of these two situations to basically create what sociologists call a moral panic in Canada. This doesn't mean it has anything to do with morals, but they created a panic in society where they're telling everybody the sky is falling, we need to do this and this, we need stronger security measures, we need surveillance, you need to give up civil liberties, we need to go to war. And Harper starts talking within a month of the attack in October, he starts talking like, we're gonna kill people, and this is the type of, discourse that's coming from this prime minister who is leading an extremely corrupt administration.
Well, you know, you make a number of good points here. If I could just interject, because I think you really hit on something important that everyone needs to think about, and that is, you know, Harper and the conservatives and governments that are similar in the United States and other parts of the world often harp about security. They're telling us they're making us more secure, but we've had this austerity agenda that you've pointed out, cutbacks, you know, get rid of social services, get rid of mental health services, put people out onto the streets, make it impossible for people to receive mental care. And that actually, of course, reduces security in Canada, reduces security in Ontario and Ottawa and other places, because there are people who need help that are not receiving it. So it actually makes us less secure. And now Harper is ready and poised to take advantage of this lack of security by tying it to his Mideast agenda, which is to further increase insecurity and instability in the world. I think your article pointed out that Harper was not doing too well in the polls prior to this Parliament Hill shooting. As usual, he was ready to interpret things in such a way as to help his own agenda. You're saying that the Parliament Hill shooting was being tied. They did a lot of effort to tie that to ISIS in the Middle East. And they also, I mean, there was that the two soldiers that were hit by the car in Quebec. And again, this is a criminal act by someone who appears to be mentally ill. I don't even think that guy was associated with Islam or ISIS. They tried to make it look like that, didn't they?
He was a Muslim. The guy in Quebec converted very recently to a Muslim. Both of them recently in their lives became Muslims. In fact, all the incidents in the last few months that have occurred, not that I'm singling anybody out, have been by French Canadians. Okay, but no one is stupid enough or vile enough to say ethnic French Canadians, they're a security threat. But they are saying this about Muslims. The guy in Quebec, he was actually seeing the RCMP before he even did that. You know, the RCMP had someone who they were sending to visit him. He tried to leave the country before that, and they prevented him from leaving. And so they actually had somebody who, a few days before the attack, was at his home. He was sick. He was involved in drug abuse, just like the guy in Ottawa, and he also had he had some problems in the family. But these things are totally overlooked. I actually want to jump to another subject that's tied into this, is that for the last decade, it's been consistently stated, although under focused, that Canada has all the laws it needs in the books to fight terrorism. Okay, that's what was said after 9/11. That's what was said in the last year and this year. Even Harper's own security commissioner, privacy commissioners, have said that we have all the laws we need. The RCMP has said that before too. We have all the laws we need to deal with terrorism. The UN's counterterrorism advisor to the United Nations has said the same thing. But yet we have a stronger concentration of powers, more surveillances, despite the fact that we already have all the legislation we need to fight terrorism and these acts of crime. These are acts of crime first and foremost. It's the government that's actually is fear-mongering and creating terror in the country by telling everybody that the sky is falling. That they made it sound in October when Parliament Hill was attacked like the whole city was under attack, you know, and they used it to their advantage. They used the panic that they helped create to their advantage, and the emotions in the air. You know, the CBC mentioned this only once. They did not go into it in depth, but you know, the young soldier, the reservist who was killed in front of the National War Monument, his best friend was a Muslim. You know, they did not focus on things like that. Instead, they focus on self-radicalization. They use the word radicalize. I think that word is inappropriate because it's really misusing what radical means the ontology of radical means. But anyways, these self-radicalized individuals, more or less, usually you're going to see that they have some type of contact with the government, and in one way or another, they're a product of policies. You know, they're not popping up in voids, and the term's very misused. It's misused to justify distracting the Canadian population from the corruption that's going on, from the government's illegal practices, from its refusal to follow procedures and to work outside of procedural methods. This is a government that's acting illegally.
Well, you provided examples of that in the article. For example, you know, you're pointing out that they're trying to make us scared of a bunch of Muslims sitting in basements getting self-radicalized, and not just Muslims, but immigrants, people who are not white. And you brought up the example of New Brunswick Southwest MP John Williamson, who told a conference in Ottawa that it makes no sense to pay whiteys to stay home while companies bring in brown people as temporary foreign workers. workers. So this actually was brought up in the House of Commons, these statements. And, you know, I understand that they were trying to change the subject. And in similar cases, when Middle East policy is questioned by the opposition, that they changed the subject. The conservatives changed the subject to Israel. And they say, oh, well, we stand by our friends in Israel and we'll never let them fall. So there have been complaints now in Parliament saying, why do they keep changing the subject? And I don't think that's being pursued.
Well, what they're doing is parliamentarily illegal, if I can use that term. When they, in fact, Thomas Mulcair, he pointed it out to the speaker. He's like, "Why aren't you enforcing the rules?" And the speaker actually let it go. You know, the speaker of parliament is a conservative. He's a Harperite. He's a Harper appointee. You know, in practice, in theory, you know, it's all the MPs in parliament that vote for him. But the majority of MPs in parliament belong to the Conservative Party of Canada, which basically is micromanaged by Harper. And they put this guy in place, and he's allowing for parliamentary procedure to be basically ignored. And of course, they don't answer anything. This is a government that, when they speak about women covering their faces, how it's wrong, it's not transparent. This is the most untransparent government in Canada's history. It's probably the most dishonest government we've had up here too. Up to this point, I mean, I don't think that it has any moral credibility to start talking about transparency at all. And of course, they have to constantly change the subject. That's what they've constantly been doing, and that's why they're blaming Muslims and Arabs for terrorism and spreading fear mongering about them. This is the only way they can take the focus off their corruption, and this is the only way that they can get the population to support their policies. I want to point out that Mr. Harper, his point of view in 2012, 2013, Canada already is a major arms dealer, but he said we need a stronger military-industrial complex, and Canada has to be one of the top arms dealers. It already is, but he said we need to start selling more weapons. And of course, this is tied into lobby groups. It's tied into helping the military-industrial complex in the United States and in Canada. Ours is integrated with theirs. The other thing that you brought up that is in the article as well is when they start talking about it makes no sense to pay we need white people to work, essentially, is what they said. We shouldn't bring in these brown people to work. You know, first of all, that's either that is either utter ignorance or it's an absolute lie. I think it's both. But first of all, the policies that make a lot of Canadians stay at home are supported by this government. That's the government's own policies. You know, they're the ones that are bringing in cheap labor in from places like Mexico that I'd like to point out get abused when they come here. You know, this is a government that panders to corporate interests, and it's acting like it has nothing to do with the fact that a lot of Canadians are out of work, and this is a false dichotomy, saying white people are staying at home and brown people are you know, this has nothing to do with being white or any other color, purple, orange. First of all, that even that language that he uses is not correct. I mean, for example, once upon a time, Italians were not considered white. Even Slavic people weren't considered white. Jews of European background weren't considered white. I mean, this is very subjective, this type of language. It's divisional language.
Well, as you point out, this is government policy. This is employment in Canada. The number of people who have jobs is the result of government and corporate policy. So if there are people who are unemployed, it's not the fault of migrant workers, who are, by the way, regulated by government policy. It's the fault of government and corporations for not creating an environment in which people are able to sustain a livelihood. So they're deflecting from their own failure to create jobs in Canada, both among Harper's government and his corporate friends, and trying to deflect that blame onto people who are just looking for a better life, who are taking what meager opportunities they're allowed through our system. So I think that's a very good point, because that's what this government has been doing quite often, is deflecting and getting people angry about immigrants taking jobs, getting them scared of Muslims, getting them scared of Arabs, and pursuing this unpopular Middle East policy that relies upon this fear-mongering. And you mentioned in the article, of course, that while Harper is doing all of this, while there's all this fear-mongering about Arabs and Muslims and extremists and radicalization, the Harper government has been linked to support for extremists, various groupings that are fighting in Syria or elsewhere. I was just wondering if you could tell us about that. You know, what has been the actual policy with regard to militant groups or armed groups in places like Syria with the conservative government?
Well, this government has given, I can tell you from going back to 2006, 2011, this government supported, I'd be very categorical about what I'm saying. They supported, in one way or another, they supported Al-Qaeda in Libya to start off with, the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group. The militants that went to fight in Libya had support from the Canadian government vis-a-vis the green light it gave to private security contractors, which we can call mercenaries, in Canada helping them. So that's documented. Anybody can look that up. Canada sold them drones. These insurgents in Libya who were tied to Al-Qaeda, they had Canadian-made drones that are from Ontario. They were sold to them. The government knew exactly what was going on. It let a lot of people travel overseas to Libya and Syria. These were at the time called pro-democracy activists, whatever you'd like to call them. It gave the green light to this. I mean, the spread of terrorism there. Canada's government doesn't have a clean record on that. It's just as guilty as the United States, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar. It's a partner in this. And by turning the other way, looking the other way, and letting people go fight there, it facilitated this by looking the other way. So to act now like we have nothing to do with this is totally dishonest. And in the second instance, yes, there's been reports that a Syrian man, was caught in Turkey by Turkish police and security officials working as a recruiter for ISIS. And this man was meeting with regularly going to the Canadian embassy in Jordan, in Amman, the capital of Jordan, which, by the way, is the center of Canada's intelligence work in the Arab world and in the Middle East. When CSIS officials or RCMP go to the Middle East, it's Israel or Jordan, as well as Turkey. But, I mean, Jordan is really where a lot of this stuff is done. And he was regularly going there. He was caught with Canadian-issued computer, government-issued computer, I believe. And the government isn't saying anything.
What was he doing? What was he alleged to be doing?
Oh, he's recruiting for ISIS. He helped the act they caught him with was taking British girls to basically go fight on the front, or maybe become what they call it, be part of the sex jihad. They're having sex probably with ISIS fighters. A lot of young girls, including from Canada till this very day, are going overseas to have sex with the militants. This is part of what they believe is a obligation. He basically escorted these three British girls who made the news into Syria. And he is linked to CSIS because European security officials told Reuters this. The Turkish foreign minister has said that he was working for one of the intelligence agencies of the coalition, the IE Canada. We have Prime Minister Stephen Harper and his government talking about terrorism, basically tacitly or directly pointing the finger at Muslims. You know, and by the way, any time a terrorist act is conducted or a criminal act by a Muslim, it becomes a collective crime. That individual can never be looked at as an individual committing a crime. I'd like to point out that the FBI's own statistics on terrorism show that the majority of cases of terrorism in the United States, over 90, it's about 94% are by non-Muslims. Only 6% from 1980 to 2006 were committed by individuals who could be were Muslims. All right, the others were not conducted by Muslims. In fact, from the FBI's own database, it says that 40-something percent were Hispanic individuals. So, but we don't hear this threat of Hispanic terrorism in the United States. We hear nothing about it. It's nothing is mentioned, and nothing should be mentioned, because I don't think you can use that as a measuring stick against Hispanic people. In fact, there's been more individuals, the Jewish Defense League in the United States, and has committed more acts of terrorism than Muslim individuals on U.S. soil. But this isn't talked about at all. So the focus is deliberately placed on Arabs and Muslims, who are also collapsed as one category. You know, all Muslims are not Arabs and all Arabs are not Muslims. But they're collapsed as one category, and more or less the finger is pointed at them.
Well, you're right. These are often seen as, when it's a non-Muslim, it's seen as an individual act. But when a Muslim is involved in an act of violence here, it's never seen as an individual act. It's seen as a sort of collective act by all Muslims, and all Muslims are always routinely asked to apologize and condemn this person. But that is not the case when it's other ethnicities. And when it's a white shooter, and there's been quite a lot of white shooters in the United States and even in Canada, white people are not asked to apologize for that person. But more than that, those individuals are always examined as individuals, and the newspapers typically go into their story. Why did they do this? Why are they mentally ill? What's their problem? How did this unfold? What's the history? What's the family? What drugs are being used, and so on? But if it's a Muslim, then it becomes an act of terror by all Muslims again.
Well,
yeah.
Well, if we looked at the attack that happened last year in Moncton, when a guy, when an individual, Justin Broke, he deliberately went and killed the RCMP constables. Nothing was really mentioned at the time. There was more focus on it after the attacks in Ottawa, but it wasn't considered an act of terrorism. And this individual clearly said, "I'm a soldier of Christ. I'm a soldier for Jesus." He had deep conservative Christian views, but that's never been a focus of discussion. Nobody is saying that, self-radicalized Christian. No one is saying anything like that. In fact, when one of the highest officials in the United States Senate believes he speaks for God, or is the agent of God, or if George W. Bush also says he speaks to God on invading Iraq, nobody ridicules that. Nobody says anything about that. But if we hear this about a Muslim individual saying something like that, they would say, "Oh, look, these crazy fundamentalist types. They're danger. They're irrational." But we have two different standards of measurement, and we have two totally different discourses going on here. When George W. Bush says he speaks to God and God told him to invade Iraq, no one questions his sanity. No one questions his ethics.
Yes, Tony Blair made similar statements as well, and was only ridiculed by certain parties and not in a widespread fashion. You know, I think we have a broad picture here, and that is, you know, the conservative government is closely tied to interests in the Middle East, such as Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other governments who have demonstrated and vocally stated interest in overturning government in Syria, for example, in maintaining military presence and operations in Iraq, and along with the United States, who has been behind this, we have the overthrow of the government in Libya and so on. All of this time, there's been the reliance on proxy forces, and these are often militants associated with extremist forms of Islam. These are the ones that are doing the groundwork for our interest in Libya and Syria. So Harper has been, backing that in Libya, and that's been extensively documented by now. There's been a number of reports about what the Canadian government is doing with militant forces, militant armed groupings in Syria. So all this is happening, and while while they're doing that, they're turning around in Canada and saying, look at these nasty Muslims, look at these scary Muslims and these immigrants and taking jobs, and you need to get really upset about this. We need to enact more Patriot Act style legislation, reduce your civil liberties. Let's get people upset about segments of the population, who are not engaged in these sort of activities. So it's sort of like, you know, do as I say, but not as I do. I'm going to go and fund extremists and help extremists and use extremists to conduct our foreign policy in Libya and Syria and elsewhere. And then I'm just going to, you know, turn around and get everyone riled up against Muslims in Canada, who are not the scary terrorist force that is being implied in the way that this is being discussed. So I think people should really look at your article, because you lay out the media comments, what journalists were saying, what the RCMP was saying, what governments were saying, what was happening in the parliament with the violation of parliamentary procedure, and the way that the government continued to deflect these issues by talking about other subjects. This is all very interesting, and I know it plays into the larger issue of toppling governments in the Middle East and elsewhere. I certainly remember the newspaper articles right here in Hamilton that were celebrating people that were going over to Syria to overthrow the Syrian government. And these people were celebrated as heroes, even though there are demonstrated cases of them going to Syria or Turkey to go to Syria, running into militant groups that have extreme views. And these are the people that are making the policy happen. So I thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. People can read you on Global Research. I believe you just came out with an article a couple days ago, didn't you?
Well, I wrote an article for the Moscow-based Strategic Cultural Foundation, which has been republished on Global Research, about the war in Yemen and about how it's total hypocrisy. The United States supports the president of Ukraine from being ousted, but in the case of the president of Yemen, it's a part of this coalition, by the way. This is America's war on Yemen. It's not just Saudi Arabia's, but it's following a totally different standard against a very corrupt president who was actually expired in legally in terms of his mandate, and trying to actually reestablish a dictatorship in Yemen. But total double standards in that regards too. It's double standards across the board, but that's what is central to empire building.
Absolutely. I think you found a consistent problem there with hypocrisy and double standards. People have to be alert to it. You're not going to learn about Yemen just from reading the newspaper or watching CBC. But Mahdi's articles are part of the uncovering all of this, and the news sources that he posts in do a lot of work on this subject. So Mahdi, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Bye-bye. And that was Mahdi Darius Nazemroya, and he is an author and journalist, writes for Strategic Culture Foundation, Global Research, other publications. You can find him on the web. Certainly Yemen is the latest thing that needs to be seriously investigated. You might be hearing about it on this program a little bit.